Hey, welcome to Stew for Thought, a student podcast project made possible through a special partnership with KBOO Radio and presented by the Native American Student and Community Center here at PSU. In each podcast, we'll discuss various things revolving around Indigenous people and their way of life, both modern and traditional.
Hi, my name is Raven. I'm a health science and pre-med major at PSU. I'm second year, and I currently work at the Native American Student Community Center.
How's it going? My name is Shailene Joseph. I work for the Native Wellness Institute. On my mother's side, I'm Aani, or as the government calls us, Grovant from Fort Belknap, Montana. And on my dad's side, I am Kwaikon Athabaskan, which is from the interior in Tanana, Alaska.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me your life story, and how did you get where you are today?
Where do I begin? Life story. Let's see. So my mom is Jillian Joseph. She's the executive director of the Native Wellness Institute. And, well, my life begins with her. She birthed me. And since then, let's see, I've been on this earth for quite some time. I guess not that long in the long spectrum of things. But basically my life has been surrounded around the Native Wellness Institute and kind of what that means. So the Native Wellness Institute is a nonprofit. It serves the U.S. and Canada and has traveled to Australia, New Zealand, and Guam, promoting health and wellness and a lot of topics in that area. And so as a kid growing up, basically that was my education. I still went to, like, whatever you call it, preschool and middle school and all that, but predominantly my education was serving in community and traveling with my mom basically since I've been in diapers. And then at the age of 13, in San Diego, California, we were having one of our conferences, and basically that's kind of where we decided, and I say we because most of the things I do is not alone, that the work that I wanted to do was with the Native Wellness Institute. So they pushed me basically out into the floor and said, you know, talk about mental wellness and what that means to you. And so that was my first speaking engagement, was to a bunch of kids that were older than me. And speaking about things that I have seen and heard and lived through at such a young age, but being mentored by some really incredible people like my mom, Jillian Joseph, or Robert Johnston, or Lavina Thosh, and many others, really, that have inspired me to do the work that I do now. And then from there, graduated high school, thankfully, and really, really close. And actually, I went to community college first because I didn't have the GPA necessarily. And actually, this has been a really big topic in my travels recently. I just came back from South Dakota talking to a college out there about visibility. And what that means as a student and students of all ages. It's really cool now that I see people talking about in high school, they're starting these new clubs and really being seen on a new kind of level. So when I was in high school, that necessarily wasn't the case. I feel old now that I can say that. Back in my day. No, but I was, I think, the only Native student. There was one other for a little while, and they ended up transferring out. But I necessarily wasn't seen, and so I never took, like, the SATs or the ACTs, or wasn't even made aware that those were a thing. And so when I got out of high school, my mom was like, okay, you know, you got to go to college, and, you know, that's the route that you're going to take. And I was like, okay, cool, like, but didn't know that you needed those tests to get into college. And so I went to community college and kind of figured it out. Basically, it was just a bigger high school. And so I'm really family-oriented, and so everything that I do has to basically go through my family, or I need their support. And so when I was getting ready to leave, my uncle was like, oh, yeah, there's a school in Colorado, and if you apply and get in, we'll visit you all the time. And I was like, sweet, yeah, that's what I'll do then. So I applied, and then still to this day, actually, he never came to visit me, which I'm still salty about. But I got my degree there in Native American Indigenous Studies, and my whole life I thought that I hated basically school, and it was the rhetoric that I lived by. And so when I got there, I wasn't fully invested until about my junior year when I started Native American Indigenous Studies, and I started learning from an academic level about our communities. I knew from lived experience and the work that we did, but to learn from a different point of view was really interesting to me, and the ability that we have to create change on a systematic level. And so it was also the first time that people outside of my family were telling me that I was good at school and I really had the potential to be an academic. And or I guess I was an academic at the time. But and then so from there, I was still working. I was going back and forth with the Native Wellness Institute and figuring out, you know, what my life would look like afterwards. And I graduated in December of 2015 with a degree in Native American Indigenous Studies with a focus. I think my like last, I don't know what you call them, like a capstone or a final paper was on healing historical trauma through Indigenous youth leadership. And so really looking at the work I was doing outside of school to bring it into the system, because it wasn't something that you really see written, I guess, or nothing like I had ever read. And then from there, my advisor and like big mentor, Dr. Majel Boxer, she was like, hey, you know, I think you have the ability to go to get your master's. And I was like, what? And she's like, no, let me backtrack. She's like, I know you have the ability, so, you know, let's go for it. And she really pushed me to apply. And so I wanted to do American Indian Studies or whatever the schools were calling it. And so we looked at the top five programs, and then I was like, well, I don't know. I'm just going to, you know, how I live my life is very more so like, let's put all our eggs in one basket and see how this goes. Because for me, I guess it was even like a form of like, I was scared and it was almost like self-sabotage. Like, if I only apply to one and I don't get in, it's going to be okay. So I only applied to one. I applied to UCLA. And so I had a really big gap because I graduated in December. So I still technically had a whole semester and then summer break before fall term started. Actually, I just came back from Arizona. And this is a little side topic. I came back from an incredible wedding. And Chelsea Luger was a big part of this story. So when I came back from Colorado, I was back in Portland for a bit, and I had just met her. And within like 20 minutes of meeting her, Thosh was like, hey, Chelsea can help you write your papers. Like, she's an incredible writer. And I was like, I just met her. And I was like, I you know, I don't want to ask her to help me, like, you know, work. But she jumped right in. And since that day, it's kind of crazy, like, how fast our relationship grew and how, like, big she was in the larger story of me with my academic career. So fast forward, I ended up getting into UCLA and for a master's program in American Indian Studies and was there for 2 years. And I was also working with the Native Wellness Institute, but also in that span, I guess, to talk about work, it was one of the summers 2 years ago from now. We were out in Grand Ronde and for our annual Wellness Warrior Camp. And there were 17 really incredible 20-somethings, I guess, ranging from the youngest at the time was like 16, the oldest was in their 30s. And we were suggested that we have this conversation. And from that conversation, I guess we can talk a little bit about it later, was the birth of this movement and project of the Native Wellness Institute called the Indigenous 20-somethings Project. So we've been traveling and with the end goal of healing a generation from the ongoing impacts of historical and intergenerational trauma. So that project started. So I was traveling for school or traveling for work while going to school, graduated 2 years later with a topic or focus on creating a parallel. So in academia, I was noticing, and it was being brought to my attention multiple times about how it was so traumatizing. And American Indian Studies is very deficit-based and the way that people see our communities. And so I was like really putting some thought into it. And when we're talking about balance, and especially the work that I do, we talk about balance a lot with ourselves or on a community level or larger levels. And so I kept reading, you know, historical and intergenerational trauma in basically every way that you could write about it. And so I was like, well, how do we balance this out? Like, what's another way to look at this? Like, if we have all of these bad traits that are passed on, you know, genetically or through our proteins, right? How can we, you know, look at the flip side? So I wrote about historical and intergenerational wisdom and that we do have these good things that are passed down from generation to generation and what's in our blood memory is still there and that, you know, we do have good things. So to add a little bit of abundance-based thinking to academia to show that there's another way that we can write about our communities and that we do have good things. And now here I am, working for the Native Wellness Institute and I-20SP and traveling around.
Everywhere.
And, yeah, actually about to hit the road again. So here I am doing a podcast. So really fast, that's my life story.
That was really fast. Yeah. Okay. So you kind of went through what Native Wellness Institute was and I-20SP. Can you elaborate a little more on I-20SP, like any current projects?
Ooh, yes, I can. Okay, so the Indigenous 20-somethings project, there was 17 of us, and we were all volunteering or working for the Native Wellness Institute at this camp where about 250 Indigenous kids from all over come together for about a week, a little less than a week, where we eat solely traditional foods and play traditional games and go back to traditional values. And it's a really incredible camp, and we've been doing it for years. And so we noticed that we had a mass amount of my friends that were coming and that couldn't necessarily participate anymore, and so they were becoming helpers. And so there was like this this gap, I guess you could say, right? Like we have programming for youth, and then we have programming for adults, but it almost was like certified, like they're in adulthood, right? And this gap of like 18s, or like you're just getting out of high school, and then you don't necessarily have like this set career, I guess you could say. And so we wanted to kind of create and fill programming for that, but that's not necessarily what we thought we were doing at first. So this conversation that we had, and we had people from all over. We had a crew from New Zealand came over, the Cockers. We had people from Canada and Washington, Arizona. I don't know if I said California.
Alaska, you.
Yeah. we had people from all over the place, and we were talking. We were having this conversation. We set 2 hours aside. And because we were like, I mean, to be honest, we were all like pretty burnt, you know, running around with 250 kids is a lot of work. And so our youngest participant in this conversation was 16 at the time. And an incredible thing about him, he is my youngest brother. And he's one of the providers or sole providers of the meat that we eat at that camp. So he goes out and hunts it and processes it himself and brought it to the camp ready for all of these youth to eat. And everybody else who comes, of course. So while we were there, Josh had made us a fire, and we sat down, and we were ready to have this conversation based on 2 questions. So what does healing mean for you, and how do you bring that to your community? And so, of course, you get 17 Native people around a fire to talk. Of course, it's going to go longer than 2 hours. So 7 hours later, this conversation, you really couldn't stop it. It was just all abundance-based, and the feeling that we created together was incredible. It's kind of one of those things, I guess, you just had to be there. And so through this conversation, we were like, well, you know, what are the next steps? What do we want to do? Because it was too good, basically, to just leave those conversations there. And so we picked it all up together, and we would communicate, you know, what we thought was best. And so we created a training team, and we kind of went by pillars, and so let everybody self-assess kind of where they wanted to be, if they wanted to be a trainer or they wanted to be a little bit more in the background or attend and help out really hands-on or, you know, all over the spectrum. And so from there, we were like, well, what do we call this? And like, well, what do we all have in common? We're like, well, we're all Indigenous. We're all somewhat in our 20s, and that's kind of the gap that we're filling. And so we came up with the Indigenous 20-somethings project, and we thought it would be a really gradual, slow-moving process. So we weren't like super worried about having like everything together, but right away people were on it. They were like, come to our community, like, let's do this, you know, it's about time. And so we've basically been traveling very, very consistently ever since. And so I'm doing similar work to the Native Wellness Institute, but really focusing on our goal, which is healing a generation. So we see these ongoing impacts of historical and intergenerational trauma being passed down from generation to generation, and whether that's through behaviors or actions, kind of really creating an understanding, I guess, together so that we can really benefit our communities as a whole. And so it's been a really awesome journey. There's been a lot of people who have kind of jumped on the team and created, you know, what it is today. And there's a lot of projects that have been like kind of offshooting off of it. And actually here at Portland State, we did some filming. We filmed a short film called Tacona. So one of our scenes, or I guess maybe it's like 3 scenes that's here near the university. And it's a short film on mental health, and it focuses on men actually, because we figured Natives aren't necessarily seen in film in general. There's this new, or not even new, it's just a resurgence, and it's been more so normal to see natives in film, which has been incredible. And so we wanted to add to that. And so we focused on native men and kind of like destigmatizing what it means to be, I don't know, I guess to have the conversation around mental health. It's much needed to create brave and safe space to have these conversations. And so the film is fairly short. I think it's like 4 minutes when you get down to it. And you can watch that at, I think it's on our website or TaconaFilm.com. And it's kind of, it was a big collaboration. So a lot of us that are in the project, I co-directed next to Tomas Carmelo Amaya. Our producer was Sierra Begay, both incredible people to work with. Tomas and I co-wrote, and then he rewrote because it was a whole thing about it. It was just an incredible process, and the quality of content that Tomas is able to create as a filmmaker and his vision is just outstanding. So it's the quality that basically our communities deserve, and hopefully we'll be able to create a lot more where that came from. And should definitely check out his work. He's an incredible artist. So big things coming from that way over there. And other than that, just training, a lot of training. Came back from South Dakota, I think yesterday or maybe the day before. I'm not really sure. We head out to Alaska in like 2 days. I just found out it's Friday. So, yeah, we have a lot of training and facilitation coming up, and I don't know, a bunch of projects that we'll see in the future.
Love everything.
Yeah.
Okay. You kind of said when you started helping with Native Wellness, mm-hmm. but was there a time where you felt that you were, like, completely a part of the team, like you made it, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. Let's see. So one of my mentors, Robert Johnston, I feel like I've known this dude my whole life. I couldn't even tell you when we met, to be honest. But the one day when he was like, hey, we need a co-trainer. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like helping think, not knowing that he was asking. And I was like, yeah, well, maybe like my mom or Levina. And then they were just like looking at me like, you don't understand. Like, get with the picture. I was like, what? He's like, you're going to be my co-facilitator. And I was like, oh my God. And I panicked, even though I've been doing this work for so long and facilitating alongside Jordan and Josh Cocker, who are absolutely incredible. I was like kind of panicking for a second because I was like, oh my God. And so when we showed up, I was like, okay, this is happening. And it was so fun and fairly easy. And then in that moment, I was like, wow, like I think I'm actually doing my job, even though I've been doing it. Like, I was like, Mama, I made it. But for me, it was like, I think I'm always growing. I'm always working towards being better every day and trying not to be like obsessive about it. Like, I'm going to be better. But I have younger siblings. I have an older brother and I have 3 younger brothers. Yes, I'm the only girl. But I also have this 2-year-old niece, and if anybody follows me on Instagram, we all know I'm obsessed with her. And she's at the house right now. It's hard to leave her.
She's the cutest.
She's the absolute best. And so when she was born, when people are like, you know, oh, when my child was born, like the whole world changed. And I never was like, you know, I've had like nieces and nephews that were, you know, born. And I was like, oh, this is incredible. And it gave me a new point of view. But to be able to like, I guess in some way, like, help raise this little tiny human who I absolutely adore, and she's, like, equally obsessed with all of us. it kind of solidified, like, I guess you could say purpose almost. Like, I always had a purpose, but, like, I want to do better for her and her friends and everybody else, like, because, I mean, we're deserving of it, right? And I've had a lot of, like, oh, my God moments, like, in this last couple of years. The day I got into UCLA, I thought it was, like, a joke. And, and I was like, man, I'm getting played. And I had to, like, confirm with multiple people. Like, I even emailed the academic advisor at the time, who is now a friend of mine. What's up, Clementine? And I was like, are you sure, you know, that this is true? And even the day classes started, I was like, man, like, did I really get that acceptance letter? Am I actually enrolled? Like, to come from, well, for a little bit of info, I guess, I graduated high school with, like, a 1-point-something GPA, so it was kind of terrible. So to go from there to UCLA, for me, was, like, this massive jump, and to be an academic, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all of these moments where I'm like, wow, I really made it, and I think I'll continue to have those moments, like, on different levels when we continue to grow and kind of see where we've been, where we come from, and where we're going. I think we'll, or I will, always have those moments of like, wow, I really made it. I'm here on a podcast with Raven interviewing me, and I'm like, yeah, I made it.
You made it. Okay. And then there's another question. Mm-hmm. How do you intertwine your higher education knowledge with your traditional values?
Ooh, that's a big one. I've been talking about this a lot lately. So, let's see. I'll talk about my most... Well, we can go to undergrad again. Undergrad, for me, was one of the... It was actually a really big struggle. Moving away from family, I didn't really... have any family in Colorado, so I was just kind of like chilling, and my mom made sure I went and stayed. So how it went was she drove me down with my brothers, dropped my stuff off, they hung out for a couple hours, and then they left, and I was like, no. And one of my first interactions, so I moved in, I actually met some friends that I'll have for life, but soon after that, within the same day, same hour, I met a group of students, and if they happen to listen to this, I hope you reach out to me. They were like, oh, where are you from? And I was like, oh, on my mom's side, I'm from Fort Belknap, Montana. And they're like, oh, cool, you're from Canada? And I was like, Montana? Like, it's a state. I called my mom, and I was like, yo, you gotta come get me. I was like, I'm way down here. And she was like, yeah, just stick it out. It's gonna be good. I was like, okay. But it was one of the first times that I was really tested to see basically value systems and tested by the outside world, being in college and away from home and being introduced to things that I hadn't before and really actually being like an adult, having to make my own decisions away from people telling me like, no, you can't do that, or like, you know, be home. I guess I've never been grounded before. I really had any, like, rules. My mom's very much so, like, let's talk this out. So it was an interesting time in my life. And so I would have to, like, set boundaries that I knew I would cross. And so it was a really hard time to kind of find my own kind of balance, because I was like, man, like, well, who am I without my family? And it's a hot mess. That's the answer to that question. A hot mess. It was like a really interesting couple of years, and then an event happened in my life that changed me forever. And I went home, and I just didn't go back to school for, it might have been a year or a semester, and then the summer. And I just didn't go back to school because I was like, it basically shook me to my core. And then that's where like my cultural values really shine through. And it was the best thing for me to stay home and take time off and reground myself, because that hot mess that I had mentioned before was like a really big hot mess. And so going home and then having the ability to actually go home and what that means, and going back to Fort Belknap to just kind of be and see my family and really remind myself of like why I'm doing what I'm doing. And so, you know, once I kind of like balanced out a bit, going back to school wasn't as hard as it was prior. And so I went back, I moved in with people who really understood me and helped me move through with my cultural lens on, not making it a big deal, but also like reminding me, you know, when I would start to slip, like, you know, well, why are you here? You know, what does this mean for you? And these questions that are easy to forget about when you're away from home. Or when you're in the thick of school, it's like, why am I here? And then it's like, I don't know. Like, I just need to finish this class. I just need to pass. Or, you know, the stress of school in general. And so I began to actually pray a lot more in my last semester. And especially because I was taking, like, 26 credits. You pray a lot. You pray a lot when you have that many credits. And I was just trying to get caught up and graduate with everybody else. But I actually made this medicine tie with a group of people, and I actually just gifted it away to my little friend. And I had it for years, but I would place it either in my pocket or in my backpack. And I carried it everywhere because I knew I had to act a certain way when I had those objects around me. And it kept me accountable, basically. And so if I knew I was, like, acting a fool, it basically would show up and basically be like, hello, I'm here. Like, don't forget about me. And I'd be like, oh, yeah. All right. And it was basically my self-check-in tool. Like, you know, am I being who I know I want to be and who I know I can be? Or am I just out here acting a fool? So that's really how culture shined through. And then when I went into my master's, it was a completely different game. I was like, I know who I am, and I'm going to go in with that, and I'm bringing, you know, who I am and who I bring with me, basically with me, which was my family and my community. And I went in with a purpose. I went in to show academia that this is where I come from and this is who we are as a people, to generalize that we are good people and that we're that, to humanize us and to be seen on a different kind of level, whether that was through different projects that I was involved in or writing this really long 100-and-something page thesis or the process of writing that paper. You know, in master's programs, they're like, what academics are you citing? And, you know, who's the top in your field? And, you know, all that stuff. And it's incredible thing, a thing to do if you, you know, choose the right people. You can really highlight some incredible people in the field. And even better when those people are from either your community or the community at large. And I'm talking about Native people. And so I was, like, really mindful about the people that I shed light on. And so when they were like, well, who are the first people, you know, that you're going to cite? And so being on Tongva territory at the time, I, you know, gave a shout out to them and being responsible to the, that we all occupy territory. Me as a Native person, we occupy territory still if it's not our territory. And then secondly, my grandma. And then they were like, okay, well, you know, that's just an interview, but who are you going to cite? And I said, my grandma, because she's the PhD of my community, right? She knows my community better than any other academic that's going to go in and extract and take away from. So it was my grandma, my mom, and the people that I work with, who I call family. And looking at it that way, in the sense that, or I guess at the time, or they still call it like decolonizing education or whatever, but I thought it was important because their voices are more than valid, and I'm here because of them. So that's why basically my thesis is so long. It's like, they're like, okay, well, chop up that interview with your grandma. And I'm like, how am I going to cut off my grandma? It's like, do you know what that means? And so it's just like a fully transcribed interview of like her words and her stories. And all I did was copy and paste and then introduce her and basically talk about her importance, because my grandma is everything to me. She's raised me with my mom to be the woman that I am. My grandpa was there too, and my dad for like a hot second, but you know, she's been like a pillar, and my family is very matriarchal. She has sisters, and they basically run things in our family, and everybody knows it, and I have no problem with it. I love it. And so, you know, it really teaches me, like, what it means to be a Native woman in this world, and basically how to act accordingly. and the impact that we can have on community. And so, you know, when I talk about cultural values or my value systems, it comes from my mom, comes from my grandma. And now I hold those, and my niece will have them. And so, you know, I think about that really often, in the sense that being tied to a place also keeps me accountable and responsible. And I think it's something that, you know, all of us should think about in all that we do, even if it's not academia, right? Like, what are we who are we accountable to? What are we responsible for? When it comes to academia, it's like, well, this is what I study. This is my field. But let's, like, what if we talked about it as, like, I'm accountable to, or I'm learning about, right? If we kind of switch this idea of extractive and then being inclusive to, and making sure that, you know, when we get what we need, that that's just not it. And so, yeah, that's basically kind of how I made my way through academia and how I implement culture. And there's a lot more, but yeah.
Okay. Another one. So what would you advise, like me? So I'm first generation student in higher education. What would you tell me to do? Like,
okay, step one, take space, because this is our time. So I was actually just talking about this. I was telling these students at SDSU, my sister and I, my sister is just a powerhouse. Oh, I know I said I only had brothers. she's my first cousin, but we're basically sisters, so that's just what it is. Anyways, there's this documentary. Dang, I should look it up by now. I reference it all the time. It's AOC, and she's one of the representatives that they're like filming. It's like Bringing Down the House or something. Anyways, there's this part in the film where she's like basically like pulling air towards her, like her arms are all out. And her boyfriend's like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm taking space. Like, it's our turn. And I was like, yes, yes. And I was talking to my sister about it. And I was like, yo, I love that. Like, I'm going to be doing that all the time. And so sometimes even when you see me in an airport, like, I'll be acting a fool. Like, my arm's out. I'm like, we're taking space. Because it is. It's our turn. It's our time. And to not be afraid of that, to kind of step into the light that we deserve and that many before us have worked hard for. And also that we will continue to add to. So that's step one.
One.
There's many. Step two, never be afraid to ask for help. I know in undergrad I was like, no, like I'm here and I'm doing this and, you know, and I don't need help. I think, you know, to come from a place of strength is to ask help, ask for help. And whatever that means, whether it's like, help me with this assignment or like, yo, I just need a break, or, you know, not binge Netflix by yourself, but, I mean, if that's what works for you, or Disney Plus these days, I guess, but really, like, you know, creating that support system, that's huge. If you have a solid support system that has the same values as you, like, success is always going to be there, and success on many levels. Let's see, what's another one? Eat healthy. That's a huge one. I, in undergrad, was eating, like, trash. I literally was, like, well, I mean, there was, like, the poor factor, right? Like, the poor college student was, like, a big thing. Like, there was one point at my apartment, both of my roommates, oh, God, if they hear this, they're going to laugh so hard. We were, like, okay, well, we don't get paid for, like, another couple of days. We had, like, a box of Cheez-Its in the apartment, and we were, like, yeah, we could last on this for a couple of days. And then his mom, one of my roommates called, his mom called, and they were, like, how are you? He's like, we were like, you know, kind of lying, like, oh, everything's great, you know, we're fine, we're making it out here. And this is part of the asking for help, guys. And then her mom, like, his mom sent us pizza and, like, surprised us, and it was like, we were so thankful this day, guys. Like, but eat healthy. I think it's a big part of being well, right? Your mind isn't going to work right if you're not eating right, and it affects us more than we think. And so I think that's a big one. What else do I have? Reach out. You know, there's so many academics. It's funny. It cracks me up when people are getting through school and it's like, well, you know, oh, I really love this person that, you know, does this work. And it's like, email them. It's like, what? No, I couldn't do that. Like, but to get over that, and especially like if they're native, Indian country's so small and people really do want to help. So reach out to those people that you want to and create those relationships. Also be very mindful that those relationships can either last or that could be the end. So just being mindful of that. Be respectful. Love one another. Love yourself. Yeah. You'll survive. It's a couple of years. You'll survive. And then you'll look back on it and be like, man, what if I could do that again? Nah, actually, no. That's not where I'm at. Yeah.
I'm only second year and I don't want to do it again.
It goes by fast. Like, When I was in the thick of it, I was like, oh my God, this is never going to end. And now I look back, I'm like, dang, I graduated in 2015. It's about to be 2020, and I have a whole nother degree in between then. Like, it does. It goes by fast.
Hopefully.
It will. And life will get better. It's great right now, but it'll get even better.
Okay, last question. What's your favorite thing about traveling to Indigenous communities?
Ooh, the food. Actually, no, I was in Dillingham. Let's see. I think now it's been a week or maybe 2 weeks. I don't really know. It's Friday, right? It's been like 2 weeks. I actually got stuck up there because of weather.
I saw that.
Yeah. I got stuck up there. The plane came down and it was like ceiling level. And then it, like, shot back up, and they were just like, oh, well, we'll try again tomorrow. And I was like, what? Really nonchalant. But anyways, they're really, like, still fairly subsistence up there. And so the food was so bomb. They were just like, oh, you know, we don't want you to go to a restaurant. Like, come eat at my house. And they were like, what? Like, really? And they were, like, cooking up moose in all kinds of ways. Salmon in ways that I haven't even seen before. And I eat salmon a lot, so I was, you know, kind of shook, but I was just living my best little native life. But no, I think, meeting the people, you know, we're talking about Dillingham. I met this incredible group of people who are, really about their community and creating change. And it inspires me to meet those kinds of people who are like, you know, really about it. They want what's best for their communities and their families. And so, taking the opportunity to really spend time with us and hear what we have to say, but also learning from each other. I learned something from everywhere I go. And so right after Dillingham, well, I was in Phoenix, actually, and it was a non-work trip. But it was basically a lot of my work family, we went, and it was for this wedding. And one of the amazing things about that is that the very first day of the wedding, it was a 3-day party, basically. Ceremony was Friday, party Saturday, Sunday. But in the sense of what we call a party is, like, different than what normal people or the norm is, like, when we talk about a party, I guess. So Friday was the ceremony, and how they started it was, like, to be mindful and, you know, to be in the moment. And because I think we don't do that enough. And so I was like, yeah. So we all put our phones away. And we were, like, in the moment, and this, like, beautiful wedding happened at sunset, and we were just communicating with each other. And these are people, like, have flown all over the country for this wedding. And so, like, everyone's talking about the work that they do and their artistry and, you know, and the things that they're passionate about. And people that I constantly hear about, I finally got to meet. And so, you know, it was just this beautiful moment. And Saturday, which you would think would be, like, this big social media day, like, we could show everybody, like, yo, you know, celebrate with us. But we all basically didn't have our phones all weekend. And then I look back and I'm like, it was this incredible weekend that I can't even describe to you because we didn't have our phones. But I think it's because we didn't have our phones, right? And so just being really mindful of that, too, like, to be with the people that you're with at the moment. That goes back to my, you know, how to survive undergrad. But, you know, when we're right after that, I went from 87 degrees to 15 degrees, and then it was like 1 degree. But I went to South Dakota and I met with some students, and they're just talking about the changes that they see. And being up there is way different than Portland. I mean, I'm not saying Portland's perfect by any means. It has a lot of growth to do. But, like, for example, I got on the plane and there was only one other person of color, and she was a Native woman, because instantly we were like, yo, where are you from? Save me. But it was actually the day of the impeachment hearings, the beginning, and everybody and their dog had, like, Trump hats and shirts, and one dude had a suit. That had, like, Trump all over it. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And we're all going to be in an enclosed space of, like, 40 of us on this plane. And so I was trying to be really mindful of the energy that I was exerting and also like trying to create my own little safe space. And so I was like being mindful, like, okay, you know, I'm about to, you know, go to this community. I need to come correct. I'm not gonna let this throw me off. And then the flight attendant, she was like, we changed your seat. And I was like, what? You know, what does that mean? And they put me in my own row. Like, I had nobody sitting by me. So I was like, oh, yeah. You know, they're looking out. They're looking out. And I did. I got some, like, really ugly comments at first. And I was like, I'm just going to keep my headphones on. And then I, like, played my music a little bit louder and was in my own little world. But just being mindful of knowing what I was going to was really exciting for me. And so when I got there to those students, hearing them and like the work that they're doing, and the research that they want to do, and basically like how they're getting through academia, was really inspiring. Because I'm like, man, like the access that we have to different avenues or mediums is really incredible. And I think that's just one of my favorite things, is being the ability to learn and see what people are up to. And then to keep up afterwards, right? So that's where social media, I guess, does come in handy. It's like I'm able to talk to people, my friends that I met in New Zealand or in Australia or all over the U.S. and Canada, right? Like we have the ability to help keep each other accountable, but also, you know, get the information that we need at a faster pace and create those relationships that can last and sustain if we so choose. So that's some of my favorite things about going into community. And yeah, this, you know, I've been to a lot of places. I'm like really fortunate and really privileged. I go to Alaska right after this, San Diego right after that. That's as far as I know my schedule. but yeah, you know, it's really exciting. And the team that I travel with, Josh and Jordan, they're some of the two most amazing people I've ever met in my life. And I feel really lucky to train alongside them and also call them family and build the relationships with so many others together. So,
yeah. Do you have any last comments?
Last comments. Oh, man.
Before we wrap up.
Last comments. You know, I think, no, I know. I'm trying to change my language. I know that, you know, whether it's only one person listening or, you know, just my mom listening, I'm okay with that. But to know that all of us are worthy of good things. At the end of the day, we deserve greatness because, you know, Josh Cocker puts it very beautifully. And he talks about how, you know, the trees, even though corporations are cutting them down, we have a lot of trees left, so... But they're out here and they're breathing for us, and their sole purpose is to serve. And so, and it's to serve us as humans, and that shows us that we're worthy of good things. We're worthy of the love and brightness of the world, and that if there's something that you want to do, then to just go for it. And, you know, the worst thing is, you know, you hear a no, and that's okay because that's still an answer and it helps you continue forward. And, yeah, reach out, be really self-aware, work on yourself. It's never too late to start. It's really interesting when I hear, like, you know, self-healing or it's a process, and then they'll be like, oh, well, that person's so-and-so, and, you know, they don't deserve it. Even they deserve it, right? Like, we all can make the decision, even if we've been making decisions that don't really fit, you know, our value system. We can always take the time to change and to do good, you know, and, I'm proud of you for whatever you're doing. Raven and I are proud of you.
Yes.
Raven's my little sister. look out for one another, love yourself, value yourself, and treat others as such. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's all I got.